It's Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
It sure is. And as promised, Eddie Moran, Ulster County historian, back in the studio with me. Good morning, Eddie.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here. You're welcome. And we live in a really unique area.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely.
Now, refresh my memory. You've lived here and grown up here, and your family's been here for quite a while.
Yeah, so I grew up just south of New Paltz, in kind of in between the towns of Plattekill and Modena.
Uh-huh.
So kind of in the Newburgh to New Paltz alleyway. But my family had lived in that spot, actually. I grew up on a farm my family's been on for about 100 years. We've been kind of floating around the New Paltz area for a lot longer than that.
And you are relatively new as Ulster County historian.
Yeah, I find myself still introducing myself as the new county historian, yep. But my 1 year anniversary is next week, so
okay.
I think I have to drop that title.
Happy anniversary.
Well, thank you.
Happy anniversary. It's a very exciting time, I think, for you to be coming into this role.
Yeah.
So much happening with the the lead up to next year with the 250th anniversary, and Eddie, the amount of history right here out of Ulster County is amazing.
It is. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, the Hudson Valley as a whole, but Ulster County, I find especially, and events that aren't, it's not a singular event, I think, in relation to the revolution.
Right.
Even for a small, I say small, but you take one county like Ulster County, and you can pick a different pinpoints, different spots in the county, and the history related to the revolution even is completely different, and I think really exciting and interesting ways.
And that reminds me that with the growth of industry, the things that have happened here, and going way back from colonial times, but now where we are, I was in Ulster County on Monday.
Okay.
I spent a couple of hours up there at the new Ulster BOCES iPark 87 facility.
Yeah.
And it's just as you were something about when you said that, I got thinking to myself, I was thinking about, the construction of the Delaware and Hudson Canal. Mm-hmm. And we talked about in the past about, the cement that was, there that built so much of New York City and all. But now we're going into an entirely new era. Have you been at that new center up there yet?
I haven't been there yet, but I've
you got to go.
Awesome things. About
you
got to
go,
yeah.
And there's going to be a ribbon cutting on Friday, October 3rd. I'm going to be there.
Okay, exciting.
For that morning for my 12th annual National Manufacturing Day broadcast.
Oh, that's amazing!
In conjunction with the Council of Industry and all these things, Eddie Moran, in my mind, these all tie together.
Absolutely. I mean, I was thinking, just now as you brought up the canal right after we spoke about the revolution, it's made me think about how much topography shapes our history.
Oh.
And in different ways at different time periods, but it's the topography of the valley that the Rondout Creek flows through up to Kingston that provides that kind of perfect alley for the D&H Canal to have flowed through.
Right.
But it's that same topography that really affects how the events of the revolution take place here. I mean, Kingston being right on the Hudson is much of the reason why it was, so strategic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the spots along the Hudson were so strategic to control in New York, but it's much of the reason why Kingston as a city gets burned in 1777 and why the history of the revolution is so different if you just go to the other side of the mountain ranges there, like the Shangum Ridgeline. You'd have raids happening on the west side of the Shangum Ridge, where the D&H Canal later goes in. That's really almost the frontier at that point.
Yes.
And so you have, Native American and Loyalist raids taking place there, as on the other side, it's really far more about the river and control of the river.
It's interesting when you talk about that dividing line of the mountains there. I notice often when we have weather, mm-hmm. and if you can, watching it on the weather radar, how it too will shape how those weather patterns are steered, which over time would have had an impact on where people settled and agriculture, any number of other things that affect our lives.
Absolutely. And so, I think that in one sense there's constants, because you have the same landscape being the setting for all these different historical events over hundreds of years. But in other ways, you have the same people, in a sense. You have the same communities. You have then descendants of earlier historical figures. At the same time that there's, one of the incredible things about America, always new people coming in and shaping those events. And of course, events are then also shaped by the context in which they take place, you know.
So I think when you were here last, I said that I have always been amazed that Ulster County is bigger than the state of Rhode Island. And I went back and I looked that up, because it's the if you look at the overall you know, square miles of Rhode Island, it's slightly bigger than Ulster County.
Okay, good.
However, if you take the land area of Rhode Island, because there's lots of waterways in Rhode Island, the land area of Rhode Island is smaller than Ulster County's land area.
Wow.
I finally got that clarified for myself after we talked about it the last time. And I wanted to get that one straightened out. But Ulster County is a big county.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's, I think, one of the you know, blessings of being the county historian, really being any public servant serving that county, is you get to serve such a kind of diverse community living in such a diverse region, in terms of like the topography and the landscape, as well as in terms of the people. But it also can be one of the challenges, you know, I mean, having to, you know, kind of preserve the history, interpret the history of communities as disparate as, you know, Highland and Marlborough, all the way out to Ellenville in the southwest of the county, all the way up to the towns of Denning and Hardinburg, Kingston, New Paltz. I mean, it really runs the gamut in terms of our history over there.
Just the names of roads or different areas, I always find fascinating.
Yeah.
Related back to who the people were and or things that were happening in those different areas.
Yeah, there's so much contained in those names. I mean, just yesterday we got a research question about the name New Paltz, about where that name came from, but also about whether it would have been called, you know, that name in the English language from the start. How would it have been referred when they were using other languages here in colonial times? And exactly like you say, there's so much history captured in just the name. The answer to that one is that New Paltz is actually named after a region in Germany, Die Pfalz, or the Paltz, what we might call the Palatinate today. And it's a region that has a city called Mannheim, where the French refugees ended up founding New Paltz, where they had previously found refuge after leaving their homes in France and Belgium. And we still have that history preserved in that name right up to today.
Sure. Do you have any events coming up in the near future, or are there things, a series of events that are still in planning as we move over the next 12 months?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm always giving talks and doing small lectures, participating in programs around the county. So this Sunday at 2:00 at the Ulster County Historical Society, I'll be giving a talk about the native people of Ulster County, the Asopus, and specifically kind of talking about them through a lens of day-to-day interactions between native people and colonists. You know, I think we tend to, not wrongly, but we tend to focus on things like conflict. Mm-hmm. You know, we tend to focus on the two Asopus wars that took place between the native people and the Dutch in Kingston. We tend to focus on disease. We tend to focus on, you know, economic exploitation, without looking at the ways in which these people, on a more day-to-day basis, more often, were just trading, interacting with one another in a way that would be peaceful and would influence one another. And so there's a really cool document from the building that's now the County Historical Society. It's an account book, and it's showing a number of named native people that are doing work on that farm. You know, they might stop by for a day as they're picking up goods from that merchant there, Louis Bevere Jr. They're also doing work like picking flax for him. And so it should be a cool presentation.
And where is the center actually located?
That one is in, I believe it's in Marbletown technically.
Okay.
It's in Marbletown in the Rondout Valley, the Ulster County Historical Society, which it's a private historical society, but, you know, their mission, they try and interpret the history of the full county, but they're not, you know, not an initiative of my office or anything.
Let's take a quick break. It is already 8:16 on Hudson Valley Focus Live. Eddie Moran, the Ulster County historian, in studio with me. We'll hear from the Zolls and then back with more about Ulster County history on The Beacon.
Live, local, and unafraid, this is Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipes on
The Beacon. It is Hudson Valley Focus on The Beacon, and it's also 8:20, closing on 8:21. Eddie Moran, Ulster County historian, in studio with me. So looking at the Ulster countyny.gov/county-historian. You've got a website there. And I note there's Jeff Miller, of course, associate. Yeah. He was in with us the last time you were here. But Audrey Klinkenberg. Tell me about Audrey Klinkenberg.
Yeah, so Audrey Klinkenberg is, kind of put in short order, our champion of genealogy over in the office. She's actually the president of the Ulster County Genealogical Society, which are an incredible organization. So anyone who either is already working on family history or is interested in starting that work, they're an amazing organization to check out. They have a research center. It's open a few times a month. And on their website, you can find exactly, what times they're open. You can reach out if you want to sign up ahead of time to go visit. And they have all kinds of, access to genealogical databases that, you might not have access to
right.
in your home or might not have the money to pay for.
Right.
But also they make transcriptions and scans of records important to genealogy from all over the county. So church records from hundreds of churches around the county, census records, newspaper records. It's really an incredible place.
Yes. I mean, it's just great to know that these resources exist. And I've never delved into it. It can be really, really, really time consuming.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And that's why Audrey helping out in our office is so important. She saves us a lot of that time, her expertise.
My wife's father, who's long since passed away now, he spent hundreds and hundreds of hours looking at their family history, and fortunately he then put a lot of it in writing.
Good.
Which he could pass on to his two daughters and to the grandchildren.
Yeah.
All but it's where we came from, we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't have good records. And that I will mention, Eddie, that as we head toward the holidays, when family members are together, please, if you're uncertain of some of that family history with elderly relatives, sit down with them and talk about it. Now the ability to make a video to do it. I regret that going back, this would have been the 1980s, my father's mother was still alive. She had come with her family from Hungary, I think in 1893, when she was 4 years old.
Wow.
4 years old. And she was in a nursing home, probably 94, 95 years old at that point in time, just before she passed away. But she was still mentally really with it. And my wife and I were visiting with her, and she related to us where they had come from in Hungary and lots of details I had never heard before.
Yeah.
I didn't record it. I didn't write it down. That she's long gone. That entire generation, my father's, brothers, sisters, all gone.
Yeah.
So my point is that where people are together with families, Take this opportunity to record that history.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because it's so true. And, I would even say to you, it's not too late to write down what you do remember from
right.
that conversation, Because I think everyone can kind of, sympathize with that experience of questions you have, which you'd love to be able to ask a loved one who's no longer with us, that you're no longer able to. And, I think it's so deeply important, because records can tell us so much, but they can never tell us everything.
Right.
And a lot of times, even when you have a record that tells you a bit of information about your family, let's say you're able to find the baptism record of a great-grandparent or even a great-great-grandparent, you got to figure, if your grandparents were raised as children knowing their grandparents, your great-great-grandparents, well, they might be able to tell you stories, giving you context
mm-hmm.
for how, what their experience were, what were stories that they told, that just aren't going to be captured in something like a baptism record
right.
or a marriage certificate. Sometimes those leave you with even more questions. So it's important diving into the records when you can, go and visit in the County Genealogical Society. But yeah, I think that's so well said, that try and record the stories, the living history that your family still has
yep.
as soon as you can.
So you mentioned this Sunday's event coming up. What other things or categories of things are you envisioning as we go with them, what's ahead?
Yeah, so I think maybe our biggest event we have coming up and really exciting on October 17th and 18th in Kingston, we have a new event of sorts and an old one in another sense called Kingston Colonial Days. So every year for decades now, the city of Kingston, with support from Ulster County and with partnership of the, you know, several incredible museums in Kingston, like the Senate House Museum, like the Friends of Historic Kingston, have put on the Burning of Kingston, which is a large-scale battle reenactment with all kinds of historical programming built around it. And this year, we are shifting a bit. So years ago, I guess they would do, way before my time, of course, but they would do an every other year schedule, where they would do the big battle reenactment and then take a year off. And so we're kind of shifting back to that approach, especially because we want to pour all the resources we can into having a larger event in 2026 and 2027 in celebration of the 250th. So this year we're scaling it back and calling it Kingston Colonial Days as our off year, not doing nothing as they used to do, but instead kind of just scaling it back to offer a series of talks, of more interactive programs and demonstrations. So they will be at Old Dutch Church the evening of October 17th. There'll be a film screening and a couple of presentations, and on October 18th at the Old Dutch Church.
Is that the one right in Kingston that has all the tulips in the springtime?
Yeah, it's right across from the Ulster County Courthouse. It's right in the heart of uptown Kingston.
Right.
And then behind the courthouse, my museum, the Matthew Person House Museum, on October 18th, we'll have a ton of programming going on throughout the day. We'll still have our reenactors out there doing demonstrations and chatting with folks. Just no large-scale battle reenactment this year.
So it's just... As we go ahead, I don't know whether we've set this up for you to be back with me monthly, but we're gonna continue to do this because we've got a big county that we have to, you know, travel around verbally here and on the airwaves of Hudson Valley Focus Live, and it's just you know, it is a unique area. When you were mentioning earlier about the strategic importance of Kingston and areas along the river. Whenever I think about that, I always think about not that it's in Ulster County, but West Point. And when you look at that from an aerial view, you understand why West Point was at that point in the river with Constitution Island and that where the channel constricts right there.
Yeah, you can really see the kind of, like, you know, the strategic nature of that site and just how important it would be. And actually, at the time of the Revolution, that would have been Ulster County, which is a fascinating history.
That's interesting.
So did you know how Orange County kind of came to
No.
So the original capital of Orange County is, you know, if you looked at a map and looked at a list of the towns in Orange County, you might be able to guess it. It's called Orange. But at the time, Orange County stretched way further south toward New York City. And when they created the counties just to the north of New York City, it cut off a big part of the southern part of what was Orange County at that point. So Ulster County went all the way down south of Newburgh and south of New Windsor. And everything south of that, almost all the way down to the city, was Orange County. So when they cut off the south of Orange County loses a lot of its economic vitality, a lot of its population. And almost as a concession, because of how big Ulster County was, how many economically important points there were in Ulster County, not long after the Revolution, there's a compromise made where the border between Orange and Ulster is moved to the north of Newburgh.
Okay.
To give Newburgh down to Orange County. And of course, you know, in that, Goshen becomes the new seat once Orange leaves Orange County. It's a fascinating little kind of micro history in its own right.
But it brings up a really important point. I mean, when you look at some of these land grants that went all the way back to the King's land grants and then how that was divvied up, I mean, there's just, you know, hundreds if not thousands of other stories about what was taking place and, you know, who was courting favor with who to, you know, carve these areas up.
Absolutely. I was just talking with a colleague yesterday about one of my personal favorite historic documents ever related to local history is from New Paltz.
Excuse me one second. Can you spend a few more minutes with me after the 8:30 break? What do we got there on time? 10. Okay. So Eddie Moran, Ulster County historian in studio. We'll spend a few more minutes here and take this other turn in our conversation. Back in a minute on The Beacon.
He's the voice of the valley. Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
8:35 on The Beacon. Eddie Moran, Ulster County historian in studio. So we're talking about the land swapping here, I guess it was, with Ulster County, the southern end down where West Point is, was originally part of Ulster County.
Ulster County until after the Revolution. Yeah, which is why that border between Ulster and Orange County can feel in a kind of strange place. I, you know, growing up in the kind of Plattekill area, I worked at an ice cream stand in the town of Newburgh called Cherry Top as a kid. And, you know, as a teenager driving there, it always stood out to me that you're still in what feels like Plattekill. It's just kind of a random spot, and all of a sudden, welcome to Orange County.
Yes.
And so that border makes a lot more sense if you think about where it's placed now once you learn that history.
The one that always gets me is when you travel down toward the Westchester County Airport, you're over on 684, and you go along, you're on 684 in New York, and it says, welcome to Connecticut.
Yeah.
And then a quarter mile later, it's like you're back in New York.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to just say, what happened there, however many hundreds of years ago to make that boundary
like
that?
There's all kinds of interesting stories like that. I mean, I don't have the expertise enough to give like a full summary of it, but anyone who's interested in what we're talking about right now, look up the New Jersey-New York land war or border war. I mean, there was an entire conflict, like a violent conflict in the 1700s. To dictate where the border between New York and New Jersey is. And, you know, people live in Goshen and Warwick and Port Jervis today that really probably aren't thinking about the fact that 300 years ago,
sure,
there's violence happening over that border and about what it meant.
You know, the one thing, Eddie, that also made me think about is the, you know, different groups go toward, I guess it would be like the Kerhonkson area. I mean, you've got the Ukrainian populations over there. All those different areas.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's always been one of the really incredible things about what we live, where we live, you know. I mean, even you think about going back to, like, the 17th century, you have a Dutch settlement in Kingston, and it's, you know, partly founded because of its vicinity. You know, it provides rich and fertile farmland. It's on a floodplain of the Esopus Creek, but also because of its, you know, proximity to native populations, where you can trade for furs, where they can also trade to the native people, you know, valuable European goods for a profit. And then how you have towns sprouting out of that, they're an entirely different cultural group, but are here, you know, kind of committing to the colonization effort that the Dutch are doing, like the French speakers down in New Paltz, like the Palatine Germans to the north of Kingston. And, you know, it's a history that kind of plays out in cycles right up to the present day. You know, even just south of New Paltz, you go to the 1800s in Gardner, close to where the village of Gardner is today, you have a little hamlet founded by Irish immigrants coming after the famine in the 19th century. And so that's a story that would play out kind of time and time again. Where I live in Plattekill, you have a huge Hispanic population today, partly due to the history of Las Villas, this incredible, you know, resort community or a resort industry that catered to Spanish-speaking people in New York City in the 20th century. So, yeah.
Is Roseton in Ulster County or down on 9W, or is that Orange County?
I think that one's Orange County.
Okay, because the line is right there. But the reason I mention that is... one time a number of years ago, someone had called me, lived over in that area, wanted to know if, because Cyprus is a Hungarian name.
Okay.
And she wanted to know if, and of course in Hungary it would be Sipos. So she wanted to know if I was aware that in that Roseton area down where like the Danskammer power plant at once upon a time was a very large enclave of Hungarians.
Wow. I didn't know that. You learned something right there.
Yeah. And it's just, this is fascinating where from some ethnic group, somebody, you know, came and settled there and family came and, you know, how these different areas grew with differences in agriculture, differences in food in particular, all great stuff, part of who we are. And this is one of the things that assimilating to, let's say, be American. There's no other way to say it. But at the same time, preserve your historic and ethnic cultures and food and clothing and all.
I think it's so important. And, you know, I really kind of recoil from any sentiment that says you have to do one or the other.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I think that's so important. That's actually something that our, I believe it was our sheriff, Juan Figueroa, might have said at our last naturalization ceremony, which is, you know, getting to put those on, help to put those on,
sure,
is one of the great privileges of my job. But, you know, it's encouraging these new citizens to do exactly that, to celebrate what it means to be American,
yes,
to feel entitled to that,
yes,
and to that culture, and to really dive into it. At the same time, you know, don't feel like maybe our grandparents did, if they were coming through a place like Ellis Island, our great grandparents, that they had to leave behind their culture, that was something that they should, you know, almost kind of shun, I think, is something that, you know, we really want to encourage people to do the opposite, to hold on to those languages.
So I mentioned my father's mother coming over. They farmed up in Columbia County.
Okay.
And in Elizaville, outside of Hudson. And I think from the time my grandmother was like, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, her parents didn't speak English.
Wow.
At 12, 13, 14 years old, she would take the wagons and go to Hudson and transact business.
Wow.
She spoke English.
Yeah. So did she learn the language of her parents as well? Or
she did. She did. And I, you know, I was far enough removed that, yeah, I never did. My father, a little bit. Mm. A little bit.
That's even more than some families can say. You know,
yeah.
I only know because of a census that my great-great-grandfather, when he bought the farm that I grew up on in Plattekill, he was born actually in the worst year of the Irish famine. And I know from a census that he filled out later in the States that he only spoke Irish as a child at birth.
Okay.
But that wasn't something that even my grandfather, I don't,
sure,
think, ever knew and told my parents or anything like that. So it's so important.
The, you know, thinking about my dad, he was, you know, quite a good cook, but there's certain things like the, you know, the stuffed cabbage that he was, you know, was a part of there that he grew up, the paprikash potatoes with the paprika, and there were, you know, his chicken and dumplings, but, you know, these were things that they grew up with on the farm and were part of their upbringing, and to preserve all of that, I think, is really, really important.
I do too. And, you know, I think especially food, it's such a through line to the past. I mean, right, we can imagine what it would be like standing on a historic site in 2025, try and in our imagination picture what that site would have looked like and felt like 200, 300 years,
sure,
ago. We can try and recreate those experiences, but food is one of, I think, the ways in which we can most closely truly experience what people in the past would have experienced.
Yeah.
And a lot of times those records are really accessible to us. I mean, there's one that comes to mind I can point folks to. There is a website called nyheritage.org that has digitized documents from all different historical organizations. But if you go on there, there's a if you go onto Historic Huguenot Street or the Elting Library in New Paltz, there's a collection there called the New Paltz Historic Documents. And in the New Paltz Historic Documents, there are recipe books from the 18th, at the very least from the 19th century, I believe from the 18th century as well. And you can see what people were cooking back then.
Mm-hmm.
You can even see, you know, what ingredients they were using to make dye for their clothes. And, you know, I encourage folks to check that out. But then if you have an interest, finding recipes like that, finding recipes your own family would have made in the past, it's really an incredible way to kind of experience what they would have experienced and keep that culture and heritage alive, I think, at the same time.
So you just reminded me, if I can think about this, we had gone, oh yeah, here, Tabor Wing House in Dover Plains.
Okay, I don't know that one.
We had gone a number of years ago, and Will Tatum.
I know Will Tatum, yeah, big fan of him.
Was there. It was a... it was a harvest meal that they cooked over the open hearth.
Oh, cool.
And I thought they would just be little samples. My wife and I went, you know, you got your tickets in advance. It was, of course, a limited number because it's not a very big thing. It was absolutely fantastic. All of the meals that were cooked based on the old recipes over the open hearth.
Amazing.
With the cast iron cookware, and the portions were just absolutely, you know, generous, enormous, and it wasn't just a little sampling.
Yeah.
You sat down with the family style, and these are opportunities that we have throughout the entire region to do from time to time.
Absolutely. You know, one of my favorite ones down in June on Huguenot Street in New Paltz every year, they do a large living history event where they bring back reenactors from the federally recognized Lenape communities. So, you know, the folks from the Native American nations that are native to this land but are in Wisconsin, Oklahoma, and Ontario today. And last year I had the privilege of getting to taste elk cooked in bear fat that they had made out of a turtle shell as a plate, you know? And I thought to myself, I'm never going to get to experience anything like this again.
Yeah.
But also, you know, this is, I'm tasting something that almost certainly people 300 years ago would have tasted
sure.
around here. Tasting an animal that we don't even have around here anymore, that my ancestors would have been able to hunt yeah. here. You know, it's yeah. a direct through line to the past that we can all experience.
Well, Eddie Marin, we're up against the break. I'll let you drop off at this point in time. But again, give the website for your Ulster County.
Oh, man, I got to pull up the domain name now, the address. I should have had a memory. So it's clerk.ulstercountyny.gov/county-historian.
The easier way, just, you know, just do a search for Ulster County Historian.
Yeah,
and it'll come up. Eddie Moran, thank you very much. And
thank you.
We'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Already looking forward to it.
Last break here, 8:45 on Hudson Valley Focus Live. Let's hear from the Zolls and come back and wrap it up on this Wednesday morning on The Beacon.